He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Thursday. It's Thursday already. It's January the 11th, 2024. The market is open. This is Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and it is the Best Stocks Now show. And, boy, it looks like we should have started the show earlier. We've gone south. We were up after a little hotter than expected CPI, Consumer Price Index, a little hotter than expected. Market was up at the open. Now we've gone south. The NASDAQ is down 91 points to 14,875. The Dow is down 165 right now, about a half a percent, at 37,530. The S&P is down 20 points right now. The Russell 2000 down 62 basis points right now. Crude oil's up $1.61. Still having some pretty bad issues there in the Red Sea with the Houthi rebels. Crude oil's at $72.98. Gold's up $7 per ounce today to $2,034. The 10-year is up a little bit after that hotter-than-expected CPI today. The 10-year's at 4.03%. And here's your asset class of the day. You guessed it. Bitcoin up 3,530 to 48,481. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show. On this Thursday, January 11th, and it is CPI day. The CPI did come out, and it was a bit hotter than expected. We'll get to that in a little bit. We had a big day in the market yesterday. I think it was mostly the news that the semiconductor sector is finally back into growth mode. It had been contracting for several months, almost 2 years, actually, a year and a half or so. And that helped yesterday with NVIDIA and AMD and all the usual suspects. And we had a pretty good day in the market yesterday with the NASDAQ ending up 112. The S&P was hitting its all-time high, bumping its head up against it once again. And if you do pull up a chart on the S&P 500, which, you know, look, it's one of the criteria I look at, valuation, momentum, what the chart looks like with the real emphasis on valuations. You had you have the S&P 500 bumping up against its all-time high. I saw Jeffrey Gundlach yesterday claiming that that's a big double top that is forming. You say, well, what does that mean? That's a negative. That's a bearish indicator. That means, you know, it got up there once. It failed to go through it. Then it went through a healthy correction. It made another charge at it. It's up there again. And he's predicting that it's going to back off. But
not surprising from a, from a bond guy, by the way. He wants to sell you bonds instead of stocks.
So. And he's always been pretty bearish on the market. But he is calling that a double top. Others would say, well, it's hitting its all-time high again. But it is testing, you know, that resistance level. We do have valuation issues on the overall market with the S&P 500 forward P.E. ratio at 20.7. 20.7 right now. That's too high in my estimation. Big tech, which took about 3 or 4 days off, some selling to begin the year, kind of back in fashion now, but it has been very uneven, very uneven. Bank of America yesterday called the market euphoric. You know what? Euphoric was March of 2000. irrational exuberance. I wouldn't call this euphoric, but it's rich. Okay,
you call it convictionless. It's really no conviction either way.
Well, and it's hard to have a lot of conviction with valuation so high, and you know, looking just at the technicals, the overbought indicators. I mean, all your oscillators and your RSI indicators and most of them indicating an overbought situation in the market right now. So, yeah, there's not a lot of conviction. I think maybe today's the CPI report, which came in at 0.3. Okay, we're talking about, you know, just really splitting hairs here. But it exceeded the 0.2 that was expected. But if you annualize that, that's 3.6 versus 2.4. But still, that's pretty cool. And if anything, it puts off the expectations for a March rate cut. You know, I'm sure the odds, the probabilities of that dropped with this drop. It seems to be a rise in shelter. Give me shelter. Barry, what's up with the shelters? The cardboard box I live in, that's my shelter. Is it going up in price? What's the deal with shelter?
Yeah, well, rents have been certainly pretty sticky. You had a bit of a decline last year, and they're beginning to kind of tick back up. And those are, you know, that and wages really are the two pieces of the CPI numbers, right, that are usually the most sticky, at least historically. And, you know, regardless, we still have a big supply issue. I think you mentioned yesterday with the how resilient the home builders have been. And, you know, that's kind of been very indicative of what,
shortage.
You know, what you've seen there. Yeah.
There's a shortage of shelters. That's the old supply-demand equation. The shelter inflation accelerated to 0.5%.
Yeah, how many new people did we get into the U.S. last year? Probably that adds to it.
There are a lot of people needing shelter, and most people. The biggest state, the biggest influx of any states was the state we live here in South Carolina. Initial jobless claims dip a little bit, 1,000 to 202. That's also inflationary. That's a hot report showing that there's not any The unemployment line isn't getting any longer. People are working. 200,000 is a very low number. You know, you start getting worried when it starts pushing up against 300,000.
Right. Yeah, 300,000 is kind of that key number, and we ticked up to what, 220-ish for a little while there, and you know, we're back to 200 basically. So.
Yeah, it's still a very vibrant jobs market. Okay, now here's the news of the day, and it's been expected for a long time. I actually expected a sell-off on the news, but no, there's a lot of scrambling going on to get in on a good thing. It's a little reminiscent of bubble-ish to me. SEC commissioners weigh in on new approved spot Bitcoin ETFs. I guess this is the cat's meow. This is the one that, you know, you want to load up your IRA with. The U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission finally approved spot Bitcoin. Now, you know what? They weren't interested in it for quite some time. In fact, there's been a long string of denials for such a product that has spanned many years. And finally, they have warmed up to it. Which many expected, and they have approved it. So that's going to put – this is a supply-demand equation. That's how Bitcoin works. It's strictly supply-demand, and this is going to put, obviously, more demand out there as people buy it in a Bitcoin ETF as opposed to holding the actual Bitcoins themselves. So anyways, this is going to hurt, I think, Coinbase, which kind of had a monopoly there for a while. Coinbase is down 2.5% today, but now you can, and there's going to be a scramble. There's going to be a lot of them. I think Cathie Woods is going to have a Bitcoin ETF. I think Gray, GBTC, who is at Grayscale, There's going to be numerous Bitcoin ETFs, right?
Yeah, I think BlackRock's supposed to, you know, basically going to fund with $2 billion, I think. So they're in the market for $2 billion worth of Bitcoin out there. The trick is you've got, you know, there's a limited supply, and obviously you've got you know, you've got folks who kind of, you know, there's some big players in the Bitcoin, you know, space who essentially hold Bitcoin and plan to never sell it, right?
Right.
And so that even cuts down more on the supply. So it's really, you know, the biggest thing in terms of what drives Bitcoin's price is frankly, is just strictly demand.
It's demand, and you have, there's going to be increased demand. There's no question about it, because through an ETF, owning it through an ETF makes it much more accessible than buying a coin at $48,000 where it's at today. So anyways, you've got the Bitcoin miners, and the Bitcoin itself is the asset class of the day. It was the asset class of last year, up 140% in 2023. We'll be right back. Back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and Jerry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. You know, there's been some infamous bubbles over the years, going clear back to the Holland Tulip Bulbs and the South Seas Trading Company out of the British Isles. The dot-com bubble of 2000, the housing bubble of 2008, 2007. Japan had a massive bubble. I remember when the P.E. ratio for the Nikkei was like 50. It was way up there. It was ridiculous. And the Nikkei, you know, peaked like 30 years ago. It was a massive bubble. So 30 years ago, we're talking, what, 1997, somewhere in there, 1993, 94. You know, the Nikkei has really struggled over the last year. It's finally getting back to where it was, Perry, crossing 35,000 for the first time since the economic bubble over 30 years ago.
Wow, talk about a lost decade. That's lost decades. Huh?
Yeah, and that's what they call it, really, the lost decade. And, you know, a lot of times you can measure a bubble by how long it takes to get back to where it once was. The NASDAQ took 15 years from 2000, didn't get back. It didn't get back over 5,000. That's where it hit on March 2000, the infamous month. It took 15 years for the NASDAQ to get back to that 15,000 level. The Nikkei has taken 30 years. So should we be buying the Nikkei and Japanese stock? Well, I would say that, you know, really the tech sector really began over in Japan.
True. Yeah.
You know, with chips and electronics and all this kind of stuff. And they had some, they dominated the world when it came to electronics and technical gadgets and whatnot, even though they were pretty primitive by today's standards. And then, of course, you know, all the cars coming into America from Toyota and Datsun. And
Honda.
Honda. Isuzu and all of those. And now you're finally getting back. So I was just looking at the returns of the I look at EWJ. I look at it every week, actually, as part of my research. It's up 3% year-to-date. You can invest in the Nikkei through EWJ, which is an ETF on the Japanese index. It was up 19.8% last year. And the year before that, it was down 18.7. So, yeah, I think it's just more of a milestone. I don't think it's really something that you want to be investing in. Japan has had, their biggest issue has been demographics. of an aging society and not having children and having to support all of those and not having enough workers. That's one big issue.
Yeah, and importing one other thing is that, of course, they as an island nation, they have to import a lot of their energy. They've been very the high cost of oil, particularly as it rose in the early decade of 2000s, really kind of put a cap on their growth as well.
And, you know, look, when I was growing up, every little trinket, every little toy you got for Christmas or at the...
Or wanted, Nintendo.
It said, made in Japan. It was made in Japan, okay? And it didn't have the best reputation. Oh, it was made in... That was pretty much a derogatory term if it was made in Japan. But they had the manufacturing that eventually went to other places, mainly China.
And South Korea.
Yes, and now it's leaving there and going to places like Vietnam and Malaysia and other places. Pretty soon, I don't know where it's going to go, but Japan is not the powerhouse that it once was. So anyways, there it is. It took 30 years. How big of a bubble was it? It took 30 years to get back to where it was. Okay, now I'm seeing a lot of today, as I look at the big calls out there, the macro calls on the market, BMO, which is Bank of Montreal, they say market weakness ahead, but temporary. You know, that's kind of what pretty much my stance on the market. I think we finished the year 2023 at a very rich PE multiple level, and I think looking at the charts, it was as overbought just from a, you know, a supply or demand outmatching running supply. The end of the year, those there were just stuff in crazy territory from an overbought point of view. And I've been saying that I think we're going to run into some profit taking and rebalancing in the market after the domination by about seven or eight stocks last year. So anyways, that comes from Bank of Montreal. Now, here comes another one here.
Bank of Montreal has been putting some stuff out lately.
Yeah, they got it.
A couple of days ago, you were talking about them, you know, initiating what coverage on Microsoft and Facebook. I think.
Well, they're trying to become relevant again. I mean, you know, like when is the last time the Montreal Canadiens were in the Stanley Cup? It's been a while. They say that the bottom, the cheapest big tech stock. So, you know, that's GARP, growth at a reasonable price. And usually those are kind of like the second and third tier stocks in the tech world. And I look at some of their picks here, Analog Devices, Applied Materials, Cisco. These are a lot of stocks of yesteryear. They're not the growth engines of today. Yes, they have lower PE ratios. Of course they do. Because they have inferior growth rates. Oracle, Qualcomm, Seagate. So anyways, they're out touting that today. Now, Deutsche Bank comes out. They've been pretty bearish recently. They say, and I'll agree with this, sustaining the 2023 market rally at the same pace is a tall order. Well, absolutely. I mean,
was the S&P was up how much last year?
Yes, and every year is different. And pretty much every year is different in the market. And there's rebalancing that takes place. And we had one of the biggest getting out of balance that we've seen in many years with all of that concentration in the high PE growth stocks because of a favorable Fed. And, of course, growth at the growth stocks. And they're saying what I was saying, don't expect those same stocks that led the market last year to lead the market again this year. It's going to spread out. And I do like the theory of moving towards lower PE stocks. We saw it for the first few days of this year, and then it kind of went back to the mega stocks again, but it's been very uneven. It's going to be a different year from my point of view. It's going to be a more challenging year. It's going to be more difficult this year to squeeze alpha out of the market. Cummins to pay a record $1.7 billion civil penalty Now, I've heard people cheating on tests and whatnot. They were cheating on their emissions.
Yeah.
That weird? That's just strange that they would do that and think that they could get away with it. They're probably thinking, well, who will ever measure those emissions and make sure what we're reporting? Well, they did. And it cost them $17 billion. Who gets that money? Looks like the state of California and the U.S. Justice Department. We'll be right back. This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Welcome back to the second half of today's The Best Stocks Now show. With a downdraft in the market after a little bit hotter than expected CPI, tomorrow we get the PPI. I think the most important event, though, begins tomorrow with the earnings season. We're going to have several banks, along with United Healthcare, report tomorrow. Then, of course, every day next week, the week after that, the week after that, the week after that, earnings pour in. And I think that's going to be the biggest factor, really, for the market. Okay, here we go already, Barry. I just got this email from Vlad Kuznyov, who works for Van Eck. Okay, Van Eck's always been in the physical kind of asset, gold and whatnot. William, I'm pleased to share that our spot Bitcoin ETF, I'm giving these guys a free ad here, the Van Eck Bitcoin Trust, HODL, H-O-D-L. So the first thing I need to do is add that to my list of things to do today, which is a mile long, to add HODL to the app.
You can have a few of those ETFs to add to the app.
Well, okay. He says, as the first established ETF issuer to file for a Bitcoin-related ETF, way back in 2017, they've been waiting 7 years.
Jeez.
Van Eck has long advocated for the ETF wrapper for investors seeking access to Bitcoin without the need for self-custody. That brings us to today's milestone launch. So it's actually available now. Between our deep-rooted asset management experience and significant crypto expertise, we are uniquely positioned to guide investors who have been waiting for this kind of vehicle to begin their own Bitcoin journey.
Yeah, the odd thing about it is, I mean, if you wanted Bitcoin by now, you could have bought, you would have figured out a way to buy it.
Well, but, there's all kinds of ways to buy a piece of it, you know, right, and through Coinbase and whatnot. Yeah. But so they're going to charge 0.25% as the management fee, which is competitive, I'm sure. I mean, that's not really high. But they're hoping to take in billions of dollars and make a 0.25% on billions of dollars for just holding it and making it available to you. So I'm not going to write back to Vlad, but I don't know. Like I say, do what you want to do with Bitcoin. I smell a bubble. You know, I fear a big bubble that's going to burst at some point in time. But in the meantime, it defies all odds, it defies gravity, and continues to move higher. Now, okay, so the big there's three big conferences going on this week. We've got the big retail conference down in Orlando. We have the big CES in Las Vegas, Consumer Electronic. And we have the big biotech and drug conference going on in the Bay Area. And the buzz this year, what do you think the buzz this year? Weight loss, the weight loss drugs. And yesterday, Novo Nordisk CEO gave a presentation. CEO Lars Jorgensen said that he sees people sticking with the drug Wegovy That's their drug, longer than they would if they were taking older weight loss drugs. In fact, the stat that came out that says that a recent study showed 40% of people who got a prescription for Wegovy in 2021 or 2022 were still taking it a year later. Well, Barry, that's music to the CEO's ears, because what is it, $1,000 a month, something like that, and people taking it month after month, right?
Yeah, and music to analysts' ears, because we call that reoccurring revenue, right?
Exactly. It's recurring revenue. That's three times the adherence rate for older weight loss medicines. Wegovy is injected. I think the cat's meow will be when somebody comes up with the pill, puts it in pill form, and they're actively working towards that. Lilly is, I know. And, of course, Wegovy goes up against Lilly's drug, Zepbound. Now, enter stage left Regeneron, R-E-G-N, which was Regeneron was
Yeah.
What's the name? Eylea. They came up with the drug Eylea to help with macro degeneration of the eye and whatnot. They're eyeing a combination of Wegovy from Novo Nordisk and some of their own antibodies that can increase the loss of muscle mass. And I have heard that that's one of the issues, that a lot of the weight people are losing is coming from muscle mass, where normally, you know, it would come from just mostly the fat in the body. And they think that they can improve that quite a bit. So we'll keep an eye on Regeneron. They say that they have clinically validated antibodies that can address the loss of muscle mass, a common issue linked to GLP-1 drugs such as Wegovy. He says, this is pretty exciting, incredible data, and opportunity. We'll be initiating our trial this year to test these muscle preservation agents in combination with semaglutide, which is the drug that both of these, the compound that both Zepbound and Wegovy share. So anyways, that is good news. Berkshire's share of Occidental Petroleum, he now owns 34% of the company, Barry.
He's about to own, he's working towards the whole thing, right?
He's going to have to get a hard hat and start visiting the rigs out in the Gulf of Mexico pretty soon, Warren Buffett. He's going to be running the company here pretty soon. But, you know, what can I say? That's probably the one that he's been buying the most. It has not been doing well because it obviously fluctuates. It's very much tied to the price of oil, which is down around the low 70s right now. But he now owns 34%, and he continues to buy it. We've been talking about Celsius recently. Celsius is a whole different kind of energy. It's not fossil fuel.
I don't think it's renewable.
It's great. It's tasty, coming out of ice cold, you know, out of the can. Celsius Holdings is now starting to expand outside of the United States. They launched in Canada yesterday as their international growth story gets energized. Okay, and this is their first global expansion since Pepsi took a stake in 2022. And, you know, it's a good growth story. What can I say? It's a very good growth story, Celsius. Their last three quarters, their sales up 71%, 95%, 112%, and 104%. And their earnings over the last three quarters up 333%, up 325%, up 137%. I think eventually the growth's probably going to calm down and level off or steady out at about 30% per year, maybe somewhere in there, 35% per year. It's not a cheap stock. It's very rich. It's trading at 58 times forward earnings. But with growth like that, you have to pay up. You know, a growth company costs more, a bigger multiple, a bigger premium than a non-growth company like Pepsi. Pepsi's very slow growth company.
Yeah, and it's surprising to me. I ask folks here and there just because we follow the name, and I'm surprised to hear how many people sometimes have never heard of it or never have had it yet. And it's like, in that case, I'm like, well, you still got some growth, got some growth built in there, right?
You can't have too much energy. And, they have other elixirs, weight loss, take this one to kill your appetite. Maybe they'll start putting some magnitude. They need to come up with a energy semaglitude drink where you have energy and you lose weight all in one glass of 10
ounce. Don't be giving your ideas away for free, Bill.
Okay. Microsoft's best positioned to benefit from AI, says Morgan Stanley. I'm glad Morgan Stanley's on top of things over there. I'm surprised they've been so bearish for so many years. I'm surprised they would even talk about a stock like Microsoft. But it is. I mean, they broke the mold when they came out with ChatGPT last year. And more bad-mouthing and bad-talking against Apple. Here's another one. Today, Barclays says, their App Store grew 10% last quarter, but questions surround the tech giant. They have a $160 price target on Apple. Apple currently is trading at $185. That's not very good. I would say that Barclays, not very... positive on Apple. Okay, when we come back, we will look underneath the surface of the market. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show, where we have a little downdraft in the market today due to a little bit hotter than expected CPI inflation report. And I'm just seeing on the downside here mostly interest rate sensitive stocks, such as utilities, REITs, things like that. That's what I'm seeing. I've seen big tech not looking too bad here, but let's just take a look underneath the surface of the market. Let's look at the Dow on the upside. Salesforce, the leader, okay, big tech, up 1.1%. And I'm not really seeing the interest rates go up that much, just a couple of basis points. Let's just look at the bond market real fast. AGG, I don't see any damage to the bond market whatsoever. In fact, AGG, which is an aggregate bond ETF, a good proxy for the bond market, is actually up a little bit. So you're not getting hurt. The tech stocks are not getting hurt. Usually if you get a big rally in the bond market, interest rate or a big sell-off and interest rates go up, you see the multiples contract on big tech stocks, but that's not happening today. CRM, Salesforce, up 1.1%. Chevron, the only other stock of note, that is up. It's up about 1%. Now on the downside, Pfizer down 2.2%. That's a dividend-paying stock. Goldman Sachs, a dividend-paying stock. Financial, down 1.3%. Verizon, a big dividend-paying stock, which tend to be a little bit, infected by inflation reports and interest rate movements. Boeing is down 1.3%. American Express, down 1.3%. J.P. Morgan, down 1.1%. And, of course, tomorrow... we're going to get J.P. Morgan, Wells Fargo, Citigroup, all the usual United Healthcare reporting their earnings. Okay, if we look at the S&P 500, we get a little bigger now. Big tech is holding up okay. Netflix is up 2.6%. ServiceNow, the big software company, up 1.9%. And over here, I'm seeing a few oil stocks to the upside. Valero Refinery up 1.7%. Marathon up 1.5%. Occidental, Buffett must be in there buying again. It's up 1.3%. You know, you can. I've seen I think there's an ETF out there, buy with Buffett, buy with Warren, buy. Well, you know, you can just buy Berkshire Hathaway, right? And be on all of the buys and sells that he makes. Or you can kind of pick and choose which ones you like, which ones you don't like, of the ones that he is buying and selling. Now, on the downside, Paramount down 6%, AES, which is a utility, down 5.3%. Man, Enphase just continues to get taken apart. It's a solar stock. The solar stocks have had a terrible year last year. Enphase is down again today, another 5.3%. Oh, tough.
And you would think going into potential interest rate decreases on the on the horizon at some point that that tends to buoy those solar stocks because it makes the cost benefit analysis of putting using solar versus fossil fuels more. It makes it look more attractive, and certainly the stock has not shown that. So.
No, okay. Warner Brothers down 4.6. Bad day for media. Kohl's is down 4.3. VF Corp down 4.2. Kind of nasty there in some of these consumer discretionary. Etsy down 3.8. Vornado Realty Trust is down 3.8. That's big REIT. So that's kind of the downside. Tesla. Tesla has not looked very good recently. We talked about this yesterday, the Elon Musk risk, because he's such a loose cannon, obviously. He'll say things, and a lot of times it gets him in trouble. He'll tweet things also. Remember when he tweeted, "I've got a buyer for Tesla at $500 per share," whatever it was.
Yeah.
Take it private, and he got in a lot of trouble for that. So you have Elon Musk risk. The stock itself just has been very, very flat. Now, look, it was $100 a share about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And it was one of the biggest winners in the market last year. But it would be kind of the face of stocks that were overdone in 2023, where you need to work off some of that excess in 2024. It would be a number one target for rebalancing, profit taking, etc. And it's one of the big losers today. It's down 3.2%. It's at $226 per share. I remember when it hit 100 last January when Musk was really out of favor. That was after the Twitter purchase,
the Twitter stuff, right.
The advertisers leaving, and it was impacting Tesla stock. You've always got Elon risk. He said something this week about all the drugs he takes. I never read the quote, but there were apparently some psychedelics in there.
Right, which, when you're basically the key to the U.S.'s space agency, it's not, doesn't look too attractive whenever,
no.
With the different clearances.
Do
you
we
have
want
to
this
have
guy
for
making
that,
rockets
right?
for our next moon landing?
Yeah, and well, Hertz, I saw where Hertz is getting rid of, I think they're selling 20,000 of their EVs because they just haven't, it's basically a third of their EV fleet because they haven't gotten any demand on rentals.
I remember when they got that big order, too, when Tesla got that big order of 100,000 cars. And I'm surprised that people don't want to rent. Maybe they cost too much to rent.
Well,
I don't know.
If you don't want to rent them, then you definitely don't. I mean, another thing I was thinking, if you don't want to rent them, then you definitely don't want to buy them, which is, wouldn't you want to give it a spin for a weekend or something? But
the appetite for EV cars is very suspicious to me. I'm just not seeing the appetite for them. Now, it varies by state. I'm sure there's more appetite in California than there is in Minnesota, but that's just the way it is. Okay, well, you know what? This is Thursday already. I will start working on the newsletter. This is my internal research that I go through every week. I go down every back alley of the market, making sure I'm not missing anything. The name of the newsletter is Best Stocks Now. That's the ones I want to own. Of course, they change from year to year. You have different cycles in the market. Right now we have the wind at our backs with the favorable Fed, which is good for growth stocks, and that continues to be a leader. But at the same time, you got to watch these valuations right now. To get 2 free weeks of the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com, We did make a new buy yesterday that will be in the newsletter this week, a big buy pretty much. And if you'd like to set up an appointment with us, 855-611-BEST, 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.